Late Night City with Pete Price. And now, my story. Real people, real stories.
I'll feature my story. I've got a story to tell now with the help of Stuart Fitzgerald, who is chief executive of the Michael Korser Foundation. I stood on a stage at Gay Pride last year and spoke about a man, a young man whose life had been taken away, which moved a crowd of thousands upon thousands. I did it with Michael's family and friends in the background. I was incredibly touched and moved by the whole situation. But what made me angry and what I said on stage was the fact that I shouldn't be doing it, that this boy should have been in the audience. This boy should have been enjoying himself. And it was a dreadful thing to think that this boy wasn't alive, that his life had been taken because somebody was ignorant and somebody was unbelievably savage. Let's speak to Stuart now. Stuart, you're the chief executive of the Michael Korser Foundation. Thank you for coming in.
Of course, thank you.
Tell us a story about Michael.
OK, it dates back 7 years, Peter, to 24th of July 2008. Michael was born and bred in Whiston. He'd gone out on a night out with some friends and some people he didn't know that well to a pub in Highton Village. He'd gone back, as one does at the age of 18, to a friend's flat for some drinks. Some drink had been consumed. Michael fell asleep. A photograph was taken of Michael on his own phone with a view to sending it round to everybody in his address book. And whilst the people who were taking the photograph did that, they found this gallery page on his phone. They found other photographs of him. Michael, on one photograph, was in a half-naked clench, dressed from the waist down only with his boyfriend. He was an out gay male at 18. His parents, his whole family were comfortable that Michael was gay and comfortable in his own sexuality. And so the people who were taking the photograph decided, with some other people in the premises at the time, to beat him to death with an American history textbook, because they thought that the things that they had seen on his phone, which weren't rude, they weren't offensive, they were just two young males in an embrace, they thought it would be okay. The next human thing to do would be to beat him to death. They beat him. He was dumped outside. His body was dumped outside in the street, in a street in Highton. And 8 or 9 days later, his parents took the heartbreaking decision of turning off his life support machine after a week and a bit of absolute hell, trying to cope with why their 4'11", 6.5 stone son at 18 years of age had been beaten to death.
Did people go to prison?
One person went to prison. One person had a suspended sentence. One person was cleared completely. The family is still convinced 7 years on. Mike and Marie Korser, Michael's lovely parents and his siblings, are still convinced that over a period of time, 7 years, maybe 10 years, maybe 15 years down the line, people's loyalties might change. The people who may have protected people at the time will cease to feel loyal to those individuals. And maybe one day justice for the convictions for all parties involved might come to fruition.
It's interesting to think that joint enterprise has never been used on this.
Isn't it? Because we're all aware of the Gary Newlove case. We're all aware of Common, Jimmy McGovern and Colin McKeown produced last year. That is interesting. This was 2008, around about the time, I think, Gary Newlove died. It was 3 years after Anthony Walker was beaten to death in Highton as well. And we work very closely with the Anthony Walker Foundation, G. Walker, and friends of the family there to help them basically to come together as a different couple of communities, the gay community and the black community, to actually share our resources, to share our skills and our values, to try and just cut this hate crime out.
Who was the instigator of the foundation?
The instigator, I think, in essence, was about Mike and Marie. They didn't want a plaque on a wall saying Michael Korser died here, Michael Korser lived here, Michael Korser was murdered here. They wanted to do something different. Michael was a relatively vulnerable young man, very slight figure, very small individual, a heart of gold, a bit of a nuisance at times to his family. I've got 5 kids. They're 20 to 27 now, but whose 18-year-old son isn't a pain sometimes? So he was a bit of a mischief, never a bad person. He was a trainee hairdresser. 6 weeks before he died, he'd helped deliver his sister's baby because she was caught unawares and waters broke before the ambulance could get there. He helped to deliver his sister's daughter, who was subsequently, I believe, called Daisy. And the emblem of the Michael Korser Foundation now is a daisy for that very reason. He'd also helped in that week open his father's new mechanics garage in Highton. He's just an all-round decent kid who had a sexuality that was potentially different to the norm. And he was going about his own business, having a drink with what he considered to be friends and some people who he wasn't particularly known to when this heinous incident happened. So the foundation was set up in his name to try to provide... In essence, we've got three aims. We want to educate people who are not part of the LGBT community about the needs, diverse needs of those from that community. We want to motivate young people who, sometimes when they find that they've decided that they are gay and their feelings that they can't suppress any longer, they find their aspirations and their motivation dropping. They might say to themselves, well, I'm gay. I can't do all the things the family have planned for me, everything I've aspired to do anymore. So their ambition lowers, their aspirations change, and they become less motivated than they might have been. There's been a number of suicides over the last 12 months across the country from the LGBT community. People in their teens hanging themselves, killing themselves in different ways because they can't face what the world offers them as a young gay person. In some cases, they can't face telling their family. And the third stream of our work, educating, motivating, is then about accommodating. We want to provide, where possible, working in partnership with housing associations and other providers, other caregivers, if you like. We want to provide a safe haven so that young gay people, many of whom can be ostracised by their families when they come out to their families, maybe of whom can be rendered homeless immediately, they tell their parents, because the family can't cope with their own bigotry and their own prejudices. 25% of the homeless people on Merseyside are thought to be from the LGBT community. So we want to try and provide a safe haven or a range of safe havens across Merseyside and the wider northwest so that LGBT young people have somewhere to go. They have a place of rest. They have a place to feel safe amongst people from a like-minded.
Now, these are just two ordinary people, his parents, two ordinary people.
Very lovely, humble people.
But they set this up. Yes. And it's a business now. It's a business.
It's a charity.
Yes. Yeah. But it's a business. Charity
is
a business.
It's a sustainable business.
It's got to be run as a business. And it has been, I'll be honest with you, it's been a little bit iggledy-piggledy.
Absolutely.
People have not known what's... Now, you've come in to put it together properly.
I was appointed in November. The organisation was established effectively, incorporated as an entity in 2010. It was incorporated and established as a formal charity with the Charity Commission in 2011. We've done lots of awareness raising since then, lots of profile raising. We've done a number of events. We've raised a couple of bob, not substantial funds. But it came to sort of middle of last year. I've become friendly over the last few years with a number of people who are trustees of the foundation. And they approached me in the middle of last year and said, Stu, we've got enough money to pay a bit of a salary now. Will you come and join the organisation, act as its chief executive officer? I call that just a way of opening doors, and a CEO title on an email gets people to open emails. I'm essentially a chief cook and bottle washer. I do everything that the foundation needs from a working operational point of view. And I work 2.5 days a week for the foundation with a view to starting to bid for pots of money that are around the place, Police and Crime Commissioner's Office, maybe from the Health Service, from the CCG, Clinical Commissioning Group, and other bodies, housing associations, charitable foundations, to actually start to put some programmes in place, to put some work programmes in place that we can...
In the name of Michael.
In the name of Michael, that we can take to schools, we can take to employers, we can take to large organisations and agencies, and we can work with people to help people understand, to educate people about the needs of the diverse LGBT community, to tell them, to show them what it's like to be gay, and to show them that actually you're not very different.
It's interesting that you say about now, because it is a business. I'm a patron of several charities.
Absolutely.
I know how hard it is.
Yeah.
It is difficult.
Yeah.
And people that go, well, that's not charity. It is charity. But it's got to be run as a business. Otherwise, you'll sink. You'll
Spot
disappear
on.
Off the face of the earth.
Spot on. And that's where my experience and expertise comes in. I'm connected very broadly across the business community in Liverpool. I'm connected to the political community, senior politicians across Liverpool. I'm connected to a lot of the social enterprises across the city. I've got the connections that I can bring to the table that will enable us My whole career has been about building and creating businesses, making them manageable, making them strategically equipped to be sustainable. And actually, we've got to be clear about this. In order to deliver our services, we have to raise funds. That's not just about bucket jiggling. It's not just about bagpacks in Asda on the 20th of December last year. It's about delivering hard, fast services under contracts to those organisations that need them and want them and being paid to do it. That's what makes the charity a sustainable business.
What made you pick this one?
Fascinating. My entire life is committed to handling and dealing with injustice. I happened to be born on the day the city of Liverpool was born, the 28th of August. Not 1207, I hasten to add, 1963. That was the 28th of August, 1963, was the day that Martin Luther King made his I Have a Dream speech. I don't know whether that's the link, but something has made me as a person, for my parents or whatever, has made me as a person committed to solving injustice around the world. My second son, I've got five children, my second son, Sean, is a 25-year-old gay man living in London. He's an architect. Sean didn't have any issues coming out. He went to a very supportive school. The only issue he had coming out was when he told his mum and I at the age of 17, which was in the year that Michael died in 2008. We didn't make enough fuss about it. He didn't speak to us for 3 days after he told us because we didn't make as big a song and dance as we should have done. But we quickly got over that. Sean hasn't had the difficulties Michael had. Sean hasn't been targeted in any way. I want to make sure the likes of Sean and a number of his gay friends and my daughter's gay friends as well are not targeted in the way that Michael was targeted in this horrible event and this horrible tragedy.
Have you any idea? I mean, I'm from a different generation. My mother never accepted me. It was phenomenal, yeah. Phenomenal. And I look back and cried herself to sleep every night of her life for 3 years.
Really?
And I understand,
yeah.
She came from a bad
that
marriage,
generation.
So she was anti-sex, she was anti-everything.
Yeah.
So, but she adopted me, she would never do anything to hurt me. Yeah. So I'm a different generation. I think the young people of today don't know how lucky they are in some respects. But having said that, I spoke to Paul O'Grady the other day. He told me that homophobia is alive and well in London right now.
Sure,
and
right.
That's the way the world's going, sadly.
Yeah.
Have you ever, or has anybody ever discovered why people are anti somebody else because of the colour of their skin, because of their sexuality? Because is it a fear that they've got that maybe it opens something in their lives?
I think it's a flaw in humanity, as simple as that. I think it's a flaw in the human spirit and the way we were built as individuals and the way we've been built as a race. I think there's an envy in some cases. I think there's a fear in some cases. I think there's a perception. When I was growing up, I'm 51, when I was growing up, I went to an all-boys school, St. Edward's in West Derby, very now gay-friendly school. But it wasn't a gay-friendly school at the time. You played rugby or you were tough or you were considered to be queer, gay, all the names that went with it. And that was just about holding somebody else in a position where you could hold them down, you could bully them. But there was a perception that anybody who's gay is a sexual predator, that they're after converting you to be gay. Some of these things are just incredibly crass.
Interesting you say that, because I get really cross when we talk about adoption and fostering.
Yeah.
Children just need love. End of story.
Full stop.
And two males and two women can bring up a child as much as good as any married couple.
Absolutely.
It's about the love and attention to a child.
Absolutely.
And giving them a chance in life.
Absolutely.
It makes me really cross that.
It really does. And it's, you know, there shouldn't be that fear. You know, we think back to the Windrush in the 40s or the 50s, and you think back, there was a threat perceived by black men coming to the country. They were considered to be a sexual threat to white men and to white women. It's the same thing passing further on. I went to see the Imitation Man, the Alan Turing story the other day.
Oh,
only 60
tragic,
years ago, we were murdering males in this country.
A tragic end.
Unbelievable.
To a life of somebody who did so much for this country.
Absolutely. Chemical castration.
Oh.
We were killing him under the auspices of the state because he was gay. Mm. Absolutely heinous.
How can people find out more about the Michael Kauser Foundation?
Okay, people can visit our website, themichaelkauserfoundation.org.uk. We've got a load of different events that we plan and deliver throughout the year. We've got a big event coming up in April and May. It's a bit of a battle of the bands sort of event. It's the third year we've run it. It's called Out on Stage. One doesn't have to be part of the LGBT community to perform. But last year, I think we had 92 applications for what was effectively three heats with six bands in each heat. So 92 acts were distilled down to 18. This year we're hoping for over 100 applications, but we'll only have five slots per night. So we've got three semi-finals effectively, Wednesday the 15th, the 22nd and 29th of April, with a grand final on the 7th of May. Those evenings will be held, the Battle of the Bands nights called Out on Stage will be held at Constellations, a relatively new club venue on Greenland Street, just up the road from Camp and Furness. The prize for the winners of that tour, of that competition, are phenomenal. So each of the winner will be entitled, given the opportunity, to play on the headline in a headline slot at Gay Pride this year. They'll be the, given the opportunity to play a headline spot at the LIMF Festival, Liverpool International Music Festival. They'll be given the opportunity to play at Liverpool Loves Festival, a new one for Liverpool on the 6th, 7th and 8th of August this year. We're still talking to Sound City. We're expecting their confirmation they'll be able to play on Sound City's, one of Sound City's headline stages. They'll be given a Par Street recording studio session for free, completely free of charge for them, to record a disc for them to play to whoever and to sell. This is Par Street Recording Studios, where Coldplay, Madonna, Kylie, Genesis and people of that sort of ilk have recorded in the years gone by. This is a stunning prize for any band or act or single artist that actually wants to come along and win it. You can apply via our website. The rules and regulations are there. There's some posters there advertising what's what. You'll find out lots on the site.
Talking about your website, tell us about the film.
The film is a two-minute, six-second film. It's not much out of people's lives. It reminds me a little bit about Sinead O'Connor's "Nothing Compares to You" film, which is a very emotional song and a very emotional piece of video. This is a young actor called Lewis who speaks very clearly, very openly to camera, filmed in black and white, for 2 minutes about Michael's life and more specifically about Michael's death and what it felt, what it must have felt like to Michael and his family to go through that process. It's absolutely worth your while having a watch of that film, because if you ever doubt what it's like to put yourself in somebody else's position, to feel what discrimination might feel like, you won't be under any doubt after 2 minutes and 6 seconds of watching that. That's on our website, michaelcawsefoundation.org.uk.
And in fact, we will put that on ours as well.
That'd be great. Fantastic, thank you.
As we speak.
Thanks, Peter.
Does the Michael Kawser Foundation do anything for parents, to help parents come to terms?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We help, whilst at the moment we're relatively underdeveloped as an organisation, and I'm the first formal employee since November last year. So we're developing referral opportunities for people who can work on a counselling basis, for people who can work to support the victims of crime, but also the victims' families. In some cases, many cases, young LGBT people have experienced crime aimed at them in company with friends. Sometimes those young people need counselling as well. So we'll try to deal with and refer people to the right counselling environments across the city, and there are many resources across the city that we can refer into to support parents, friends, siblings, whatever it might be, to help them understand what their contact, their friend, their sibling is feeling.
Are you excited about this new venture?
I'm incredibly excited. The opportunity to make a difference to a whole community across the city is brilliant to me. And it's kind of, if you are motivated by injustice or motivated by justice and loyalty and supporting your fellow person, particularly, I live my life for this city. If you're motivated by that, you couldn't fail to be excited by this opportunity.
Take your head off for a moment of Chief Executive Officer.
Yeah.
What would you say to any parent listening now who is struggling to come to terms with a child that's gay?
Okay, first thing I'd do is call me. I'm the father of a gay young man, 25-year-old, as I say. Call me. I'll personally speak to them in the first instance. I'll help them to understand how we coped with it and just give another experience. We can then refer them on, in the first instance, if they would like to talk to some of our other trustees, five of whom are from the LGBT community, one of whom is our chair, which is former Lord Mayor Gary Miller. We can then refer them on to organisations who deal specifically in family settings, who work with families to understand differentness, to understand diversity, to understand what LGBT means to people. As a parent, I would just say, talk to somebody else who's been through it. Drop your prejudices, drop your discriminatory concepts, drop your bigotry, which you might have been given yourself as a parent 40, 50 years ago. Drop all of that. Open your heart, open your mind and say, who can I talk to that can help me with this? Isn't that just great advice for parents in general? Talk to someone who's done it.
That child has never changed. The child's the same child that you... Always he's just told be. You something different.
Always will be.
Yeah, always. Tell us again how they can find out more about Michael Causer Foundation.
OK, in the first instance, visit our website. So it's the michaelcauserfoundation.org.uk. You'll find lots of resources there. You'll find lots of contact details there. You'll find the names of the trustees. People might know them if you ask enough people around the place. They might know them. They might affect an introduction for us. Just email us. You can donate on our page. Mm. You can learn how we educate, motivate and accommodate young LGBT people. You can come to one of our events. You can help us raise money. You can volunteer. Somebody emailed me last night saying, can you tell me how to set up? Never heard of the guy. Don't even know if he's in the city. Won't name him, but he emailed me last night saying, can I establish a direct debit or standing order to the Michael Causer Foundation because I'm so impressed with what you're doing. We haven't started yet, Pete.
Yeah, you mentioned Gary,
yeah.
Our ex-Lord Mayor.
Indeed.
One of the most moving, magical moments of my life, knowing the pain I've gone through over the years, was to see him. I'm getting upset now.
Yeah.
Standing with his partner on St. George's Hall, starting the march.
Yeah.
I thought, God, we've come a long way.
Incredible. 33 years Steve and Gary have been together. 34, I think, this year. Gary's currently in China. And it is incredible. And I was talking to another of our trustees the other day, a trans man, who's been with his partner for 12 years. It's their anniversary next week. And they got together when Tom was 20. And even that, 12 years from 20, as a relationship for two adults to be together, regardless of sexuality, that's just great. Just two people who love each other being together. Gary is an absolutely outstanding inspiration to straight and gay people equally across the city and way beyond. Gary's now a diversity role model. Loads of high-profile people, Gareth Thomas, for instance, people along those sort of lines across the nation are diversity role models, going into schools, going into employers, talking about how to cope with LGBT diversity issues. It's fantastic. He was also named in the Out at Work Top 50 Professionals Out at Work, but in the Daily Telegraph, I think he was number 16 in their first release of
that. They've missed me out of that.
We'll get you in a 50. I think you've been in a 51, Pete.
Can't believe I've gone out on that one. Stuart Fitzgerald, thank you so much for coming in. You're the Chief Executive Officer of the Michael Causer Foundation. We're here for you anytime you want.
Thanks indeed. Thanks very much indeed. Thanks for listening.
Biggest after-hours talk show. This is Late Night City with Pete Price on City Talk 105.9.